Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens by TheAthletic.com. I am Marc-Antoine Godin with, as usual, Arpin Basu. But we have a special guest today, Arpin.
Yeah, well, for those of you who listen to our French podcast, you would know that on Friday we intended on going over Corey Pronson's midseason prospect ranking, and we ran out of time, so we figured, why don't we actually invite the guy who did the ranking to come and talk about them instead of us just talking about them, which really had very little value in comparison. So Corey Pronman is here with us. Thank you, Corey, for joining us.
Yeah, sure. My pleasure.
So I just want to tell our listeners that Corey and Max Baltman, the last episode of the Athletic Hockey Show's Prospect Series, did do a pretty thorough breakdown of Corey's midseason ranking. So we're going to try to avoid some of the same subjects. But I think one topic that you went over with Max that I think is applicable to the Canadians is the Matvei Mitkov situation. You know, it's a clear top four in this draft. Doesn't seem to be much argument across several rankings, yours included. The Mitkov situation seems relevant to the Canadians in the sense that if the drafts were happening today, I'm recording this Monday afternoon, the Canadians, and no lottery changes happened, the Canadians were picking seventh. So I'm sure there are teams that are going to finish in that 5 to 8 range who are wondering, how far is this guy going to slide? Do you have a sense, speaking to scouts around the league, of what the potential is for him to drop out of the top four?
I think there is reasonable potential there. And I would say among people I talk to in the league, there's a divide. I think there's a significant pool of people who have real concerns about using a premium draft pick on Mitchkov for a variety of reasons, from the Russia situation to his contract with SKA St. Petersburg, and even some minor concerns on the player himself. He's a small winger. He's not an incredible skater. So there are some risk variables on the profile and to go with the other issues. But then there's also a significant number of people I talk to in the league who are just anxious to select this guy, who just, you know, see one of the most skilled and one of the most intelligent offensive players they've seen come into the draft of recent years, and would be really excited to add him to their organization. So thankfully, it's not mock draft season yet, because that one would be giving me a few headaches. But, you know, I wouldn't, you know, off the top of my head, I would not be projecting a massive slide. Like, I've had a couple of guys ask me if they think if he can get outside the top 10. I would not think that's what's going to happen based on what I've heard so far. Maybe he doesn't go top four, maybe it's 5, maybe it's 6, 7. Age, something like that. I don't know the exact number. You know, I thought it was interesting when Bob McKenzie did a survey of teams, there were still some teams he talked to who had him as high as second overall. That's a minority opinion, I believe. But like I said, I think there's mixed takes on this situation across the NHL.
Just at some point, no matter, you know, the factors that you bring, that you mentioned, his contracts with St. Petersburg, the whole Russian situation, despite those factors, there'll come a time where teams will say, well, in terms of talent, simply talent and the the gap that there will be between him and the other guys, it'll be just too good to pass up, right?
Yeah, and that point is probably going to happen very early in the draft, and that's quite a question, you know, for a management team to have to respond to, you know, whether to their ownership group or to their fans is, you know, what do we do when we think the next best player is significantly worse than this player? Not every single NHL person I agree with would agree with that assertion, but there would be, I think, a number of people in the league who would agree that, you know, difference between, say, Matvei Michkov and Edward Chalet, or Michkov and Will Smith, or Michkov and Oliver Moore, or David Reinbacher, that it's going to be a massive drop-off in ability. And, you know, so how do you, you know, reasonably say no to that, especially when you consider that the alternatives, you know, taking the, for example, the Russia variable out for a second, just focusing on the contract, in that, you know, he's going to need to play three more full seasons in the KHL. You know, it's a long time, but, you know, you look at whatever Smith, Moore, Braden Jaeger, Chalet, Reinbacher, Zach Benson, you know, how many of those guys are really going to impact an NHL lineup within the next 3 years? Maybe one, maybe two. Can't tell you confidently which one or two of those it's going to be. So, I mean, that's part of the balancing act there too.
And not just that, but also the fact that he's, you mentioned impacting a roster. It's one thing to introduce a guy from USNDDB and say, well, in 3 years, he might be in the league. But my understanding is that Michkov is good enough that even in his rookie season, the minute that he's going to enter an NHL lineup, he's going to have an impact. He's that good, right?
Well, we think. I mean, he's still just now getting it done in the KHL on the league's worst team. I presume 3 years from now, he will be a much, you know, more physically developed pro and ready to do that in the NHL. But, I mean, he wouldn't be able to do that next season. So we'll see how his KHL development goes. I think 3 years from now, we are talking about a player who will be able to do that. But that's 3 years into the future.
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine it'd be somewhat similar. Obviously, the pedigree is not the same, and he was taken much later in the draft. But when Kaprizov came in,
sure,
he was ready to. He was an impact player right away, right? Because the right. Seasoning had all been done on the Wild's behalf. But, you know, I think if everyone remembers back to the Wild wondering if he was ever going to come over, that's a stressful situation for any franchise who draft this guy, right?
And Kaprizov took probably a little bit longer than even Michkov will take. Mm-hmm. Situation might be even more analogous to when Evgeny Kuznetsov came over. He took a couple extra years with Chelyabinsk. Both of those guys, that the athletic toolkits are probably a little bit more, you know, high-end than Michkov, which are just purely skill and hockey sense-based. So like I said, I think we need to see how quickly that translates into being a top KHL player. So far with Sochi, he's looked very good. But yes, I think most likely 3 years from now, we are talking about a guy who is ready to come in and play us a significant scoring role in an NHL lineup. Well, technically 4 seasons from now, but 3 full KHL seasons from now.
So now the Canadians, you know, if we're looking at what should be like the most possible outcome in terms of their draft ranking, we're looking probably at 6 to 8, something like that, from where we stand today. And in that bracket, in that range, one of the interesting players is defenseman David Reinbacher, the Austrian defenseman. But you mentioned on the Athletic Hockey Show how you thought that Reinbacher had a really good chance of being a top 4 defenseman in the league. And right off the bat, hearing that, I thought to myself, well, if I'm picking 6th, for example, I want a top pairing defenseman, not a second pair defenseman, which leads me to this. When a prospect projects as a top 6 forward or a top 4D, is the gap between a second pairing defenseman and a first pairing defenseman bigger than it is between, let's say, a second line winger and a first line winger?
Well, the way I phrase that when I'm talking to Max, I think he's got a really good chance. I kind of confidently feel this guy is going to be, you know, a second pair defenseman. But in my write-up on The Athletic, like I said, I project him as a top of the lineup guy. I think this guy has the toolkit to be like a legit top pair defenseman. Right. So maybe I just didn't frame that correctly. You know, And I wouldn't rank a guy sixth if I didn't think he had the ability to play high in a lineup to play a major role on an NHL team. So you know, I do think he has that potential. But I think in that conversation with Max, it has meant that when you look at all the tools this guy has, he's 6'2", he can skate, he has offense, he competes. It's hard to imagine him not becoming, at the minimum, a top four defenseman.
So just further on him, you know, you have him pretty high up. But I mean, when a draft is, I guess, would deficient be a fair word in terms of the quality of defensemen available in this draft? It's thin on defense,
yes,
to say the least. Does that influence where you rank a defenseman just because there's such a dearth of them that position becomes more valued in a situation like this, just basic supply and demand? Or is this not a reflection of that at all? Does it have nothing to do with the actual pool of defensemen available?
Not on a list that I would do. No, I put him there because I think on pure ability and based on his, you know, his toolkit, and how he's looked this season in a very good league, I think he merits that slotting. I think those conversations come more into play within team meetings and conversations between the manager and even their higher ups, but typically between the scouting director and the manager, when they start talking about, you know, centers and defensemen tend to be elevated up lists based on just their market premium. So I think that happens, and I think that could very well happen when the draft actually, you know, when the draft process gets closer and teams start making their list, is managers start challenging their scouts on whether we really have this winger over this defenseman who's projects to be a lot more valuable to us. But in terms of Ryan Backer, I think he is a top 10 player in this draft class on pure ability. I didn't think that coming into the season, but very quickly in the first few months of the year, when you started watching this guy in Switzerland, it became obvious that this is a, you know, a premium defense prospect. And when you compare him, he would compare some other very recent high draft picks on the blue line.
Right, like if you were to compare him to a Nemitz or a Yiricek.
He would compare similarly to those guys at the same age.
Okay.
Oh, that's interesting. So the Canadians, their best two forwards, Suzuki and Caulfield, are on the small side. Caulfield is a small forward. Look at their some of their best prospects outside the NHL. Lane Hutson is a small defenseman. Sean Farrell is a small forward. I mean, Philip Mishard is not that big either.
Was kind of maybe not like super short, but he's not imposing either.
No, you're right. So all in all, do you think that because of their pipeline and their, you know, the group of talented up and coming players that are on the short side, do you think that it's going? How much do you think it might impact their decision making? And looking at guys like Zach Benson or. Jeez, when you go down the list, it's incredible the number of smaller forwards that are available in that first round this year. It's really unusual. But how much do you think that the Canadians or any other team in their situation would look at what they've got versus what's available, and that would play a major factor in what they ultimately decide to do?
Right, and Montreal does have some big guys. Obviously, Juraj Slafkovský is like a physical beast. Caden Gooley, you got Jack High, and Logan Mailloux, big mobile, physical defenseman. You know, so you know, they have some of those guys there. It was interesting though when I was at the airport coming back from the CHL Top Prospects game, I ran into a scouting director, and he told me that was the smallest Top Prospects game he's seen in his time doing this, which I thought was kind of funny after given that observation you just made. Well, it's a good question, because when I talk to, you know, people who are, you know, in charge of those decisions, whether it's the management types or the scouting directors, you know, they always tell me, you know, their goal is they're trying to, you know, you're trying to build a Stanley Cup roster, right? I mean, that is, you know, it sounds obvious, but that is the goal. So a lot of people will look at, well, what does the last Stanley Cup finalists roster look like? What does the last top four rosters look like? And the usual observation that comes back is they're not full of 5'9", 5'10 forwards. Those guys do exist in those playoffs at times, but they are more on the rare side. And, you know, the playoffs tend to be, especially for the Final Four, tend to be built more for bigger, heavier, you know, fast type of players who also can provide offense. So, you know, when you have a top 10 draft pick, that is a premium asset. And that is your opportunity to get, well, maybe not 6 to 8, you won't get everybody, but you get mostly your choice of the entire field to get, take whatever kind of player type you want. And usually teams in those positions don't want to pick the small forward, just because, you know, why, there's probably so many other options available to you, that I think teams typically would shy away from that. And especially in a situation, like you said, with Montreal, where you've got so many of their premium guys, particularly Suzuki and Caulfield, that are on their smaller side. There isn't a lot of precedent in recent history, outside of, say, Montreal's, frankly, run to the Stanley Cup final, where you have, you know, a couple of select guys like that, who are your best players.
Yeah, and I mean, further to that, it's you know, you look like Caulfield's obviously entrenched. He's going to sign probably a long-term extension at some point in the next few months. I could see Montreal being like, okay, well, we have our small guy. Like, we can't have more of them. So it does strike me as somewhat like when you look at on your list at number 7, Edward Chalet, and I think Bob McKenzie had him at 12. I think the Elite Prospects kind of consensus board has him at 6. Seems to be a guy that would fit in terms of a bigger guy who would add that size and skill package. But I just want to hear you maybe talk about what kind of player this is and what sort of what makes him unique and what makes him such a high prospect.
Yeah, I mean, the toolkit is really intriguing with Chalet. This is he just recently scored a hat trick over in the Czech Pro League, because he's either 6'1 or 6'2. I've seen varying different measurements. Central recently had him at 6'2, and he can skate well. And he has, I believe, high-end skill as well. So that tool package right away is just really intriguing. I would say his consistency hasn't been the best over the last 2 years, but when he's been at his best, such as, say, at the U18 World Championships last spring, he can blow you away with his talent. And that's more of a rare tool package there, and that you normally think of with a top 10 pick. Not everybody I talk to in the league has him there because of that, maybe that inconsistency throughout the year. But I see a very talented player and a one with a lot of potential to be a high in the lineup forward in the NHL.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
The Canadians will also have the Florida Panthers first round pick. Right. And so if you know, barring a push that would enable the Panthers to get into the playoffs, we're probably looking at, I don't know, 14th, 15th pick, something like that. And I know that the Canadians are looking to add guys with like really, really good level of compete. Sure. Guys who could be like the next generation Brendan Gallagher, you know, that sort of drive. And I went down, I mean, I looked at your list, and among the guys that have above average compete or even high end compete, well, obviously we mentioned Zach Benson earlier, that at 14, 15, well, there's a chance he might still be there, but maybe not. There's maybe Oliver Moore, Ryan Leonard, guys like that. Is there Is there one quality prospect that you see in particular that really fits that bill, and picking him at 14 or 15 would not only solve, answer that need in terms of having a guy who brings the compete level to a higher notch for him and the rest of the group, but also has enough skill to justify that you pick him at so high as 14 or 15?
Well, you know, every NHL team, at least the ones that I talked to, I don't want to speak for all 32, but I'm pretty sure all 32 teams want guys with strong compete level. That's usually almost like the first thing I always hear scouts talk about when prioritizing guys in their list is, you know, they want guys who compete well, and they want those guys to, you know, have good skating ability and skill and hockey sense and not be tiny and so on and so forth. You know, I think you isolated the right guys. I think Moore, Jaeger, Benson, Leonard, maybe even Charlie Strandberg, those all kind of feel like guys in that territory of the draft that compete really well. Strandberg maybe doesn't have the offense of those guys, and he's kind of falling a little bit, but even though I still talk to a minority of scouts who are really high on him. But I think those other guys kind of fit in that realm. I know Ryan Leonard was really high on Central's mid-year list. I think they had him at 4. I would guess if we did the draft today, he probably goes more towards the teens. So that's, you're probably talking about that Montreal pick right there. You know, where he goes, where Moore goes, I still think is to be determined based on these closing months. That they're about to play a very important tournament this weekend in Finland that I think will be important in terms of slotting them going forward. So we'll see. But I think those are the right guys you've isolated. Even though none of Moore, Jaeger, or Leonard are really, you know, the biggest guys, they all skate well, in the case of Moore, exceptionally well, and they also compete at a high level too.
One question I had on your ranking, because this is a guy that I kind of enjoyed watching myself at the World Juniors, and you dropped Dvorsky down from 6 to 13, and I think you're a bit lower on him than maybe some of the other rankings. I think he was ninth on McKenzie's list. Yes, he was. And so is that a reflection of some sort? I mean, could you expand on that decision, I guess, in terms of dropping him? Because the toolkit seems quite intriguing with that guy.
Yeah, I would say the skill is definitely really intriguing him. I think he can run a power play at a higher level. He's very skilled. He's intelligent. He has a great shot. Inside the offensive zone, he can accomplish a lot of things. His skating has always been a concern with me, and it still is. And I would not say... I thought he had a good World Junior, but I would say his season in general over in Sweden has not gone amazing. I don't think it's been bad, but it hasn't been amazing. Actually, recently he's been down at the junior level, not with the Allsvenskan team anymore. It's interesting because that aforementioned tournament I just mentioned, there's a ton of NHL people from North America overseas right now, and when he got sent to the junior leagues, I was told there was probably about 100 plus scouts at one of his junior games watching him, a little bit of an exaggeration, but right. Probably not too far off. And there is still quite a bit of league interest. I still think this guy is going to be a very high draft pick. But as I looked, I think there's going to be some risk. You're kind of seeing it with how he's handling the transition to Allsvenskan this year with his skating on how he's going to translate versus men. There's NHL scouts I talked to who agree with me, who wonder what the, you know, if this guy is going to be like a really impactful NHL player. But there are some scouts I talked to as well who absolutely love this player too, and who feel that I'm a little off. But if the draft happened today, I would bet against him going in the top 10. But I would guess that his range would be something between like 8 to 14. I think
two guys we've discussed. Earlier on, Reinbacher and Mishkov. If I just blend those two guys and ask you this following question, there are, apart from Reinbacher, there are other defensemen that seem to be considered quite seriously. Mikhail Gulyayev and Dmitry Simashev were both Russians. Is the Russian factor the same for those two guys than it is for Mishkov? And I refer to that not necessarily contract-wise, but because of the whole geopolitical situation. And I suspect, you know, you might know a little bit more than me, but none of us around here are experts in that field. But no. Do you think that this is going to impact not just Mishkov, but also the ranking of guys like Guliyev and Samashev?
I mean, it's hard to say. We've only been through one draft with this current geopolitical climate. And in that draft, we had two really highly thought of Russian prospects in Ivan Marosachenko and Danila Yurov. But one of them, Marosachenko, had serious medical questions. Marosachenko went 20th and Yurov went 24th. But there were skeptics of Yurov's overall talent. Some loved him, some weren't as much in love. So there was that variable too. And then with Marosachenko, everyone loved the player, but was worried about the medicals. So it's tough to say with those particular players, Simashev and Guliyev, and Daniel Butch as well, where those guys will ultimately fall in the draft. My sense is that if you have a really premium draft pick, top 10, top 12, top 15, I think those teams are going to be hesitant to use that on a Russian player unless they think he is, you know, the clear best player and ownership is also on board with that selection, which I think is the same analysis that's going to happen with Mishkov. At some point, the gap is just going to be so wide that it's going to be detrimental to your organization not to pick him. And if your ownership's on board with it, you're going to make that selection. Ownership and also maybe a management group that's secure with making that decision. Those guys, I think, have more standard KHL deals where it's two more years and then they're up. But it also doesn't mean they couldn't sign an extension. Those are the various risks. So answering your question, Simashev and Guliyev, I don't see them being top 10, top 15 picks, but I think they've got good chances still to be first round picks.
A couple of guys you have on your latest ranking, actually right near the bottom of you know, top 35 here, two goaltenders, right? Adam Gajan, am I saying that right?
Guyon, but close enough.
Guyon, yeah. No, that wasn't close at all. Anyhow, Adam Guyon of the NHL, Chippewa, and Michael Rabel. Is that right? Did I get that right?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. All right. Both goaltenders. And I've been talking to actually scouts. I've been talking to goalies about this. I had a long chat with Sam Montembeau about, everyone talks about the risk involved in drafting a goalie. And I'm convinced it's because of the waiver rules. The Canadians were able to go get Sam Montembeau because he was not, they did not have enough time to develop him before he became waiver eligible. The Canadians are going to be facing this exact same scenario probably in the fall with Caden Primo. I think goalie, there's Dustin Wolf in Calgary, kind of a similar situation where he's probably penciled in as their backup simply because he's waiver eligible. The Canadians need a goalie. They're going to need a goalie.
Sure.
Within the next few years. I guess two questions really. A, could you just talk about these two guys in greater depth in terms of sort of the quality of prospect they are, and if there are any comparables that come to mind for the two of them? And then B, in a general sense, is like, how big of a blind spot is this in the way the game is evaluated and scouted and managed? Like, this position just seems like a critically important position for a franchise to be able to win anything, and seems to be totally under it's not treated with the importance that it deserves as a scouting community generally. So I guess, yeah, if you could speak to those two things, like, they're kind of separate things, but you know, they're sort of related.
Right. I think we'll start off with how your analysis started with discussion of Wolf and Primo and Montembeau. Those are three good goalies. The question would be, are those going to be goalies that play 50 games for you and help you win a Stanley Cup final? I think those are, I think those are balancing acts there in that, they're all nice players, but, are they special goaltenders? And I think when you select a goalie high in the draft, like I think Guyon will go, like I think Rabel will go, like I think maybe where Yaroslav Askarov and Spencer Knight went, you are identifying an athlete that you think you can develop with time and become that kind of special goaltender, a top 10, top 15 goaltender in the NHL. And when you look at Guy and you look at Rabel, they have those special athletic qualities. Guyon's, a high end athlete in terms of his, his lateral agility, the way he can move around the crease. He's kind of still, a little all over the place. Kind of a late bloomer. This is a second-year eligible goalie. Came over from Slovakia and you know, been good, not amazing North America, but obviously had that lights out World Juniors where he stole a game versus the Americans and nearly broke Canada's hearts there in the quarterfinal. You know, he was outstanding in that tournament and showed traits that can translate into an NHL goalie. My comparable for him would be Ilya Samsonov, who was a late first round pick in the draft. And Robel is a 6'6 goalie who moves quite well for a guy that size, and I think has good structure, good hockey sense. There's a lot there to bet on. He is the more consensus top goalie prospect in this draft among scouts I talked to. Also up and down and with club play, but very good internationally when he played the Hlinka this summer. My comparable for him would be Jacob Markstrom.
And yeah, just generally speaking, do you, you know, the whole goalie, you know, goalies are voodoo thing that people talk about, and to some extent is rooted in some truth, but it's not, it shouldn't be. They should not be voodoo. They're too important. It would be like saying quarterbacks are voodoo. You know what I mean? It seems ridiculous to me that in 2023, NHL teams still can't get their heads around how to project properly for young goaltenders. It just seems ridiculous.
I think the waiver rule you brought up is important. I used to subscribe to the goaltenders as voodoo thing. I don't anymore now. I think it's more bullshit. I think the issue is more along the lines of that you don't have... I think if you look at the caliber of athletes that come through and play that position, I don't think you really see like special athletes at that position as frequently as you used to. Like, there are not like Marc-Andre Fleury's anymore that are like special like freak athletes at that position. The closest one we saw was Askarov, and if he didn't kind of bomb his World Juniors and then the season was canceled, he might have been like a super high draft pick. I think you just don't see those kind of caliber of players. I think the waiver rule is a variable in that, you know, goalies, because there's so few of them on an NHL roster, you only can have two and you only can play one a game. You know, you have to be really careful when you bring these guys up, and, you know, those other guys are not giving up their job so easily. So these guys stay in the minor leagues for a long time. And then, yeah, they come up against those 3 years that they've been in the minors, and now it's time to make a decision. So those are complicating variables. But yes, no, they are very important to NHL teams. And NHL teams do take, drafting goaltenders, acquiring goaltenders very seriously. But in terms of, you know, acquiring them in the draft with high picks, you go through, you know, given how many drafts I've covered, you only see one or two of those guys, maybe a year, that look like legit guys, like guys you think, hey, this guy, not a lock, but he's got a chance to be, like I said, that 40, 50 guy game for us, you know, a guy who will lean on in the playoffs. Those guys are pretty rare, and they are usually not locks to become that. So I understand why they aren't guys who go in the top 10, top 15, but we've seen, I don't know, last 5 years, we've seen first round goalies. And, you know, in the Kosa Wallstedt draft, we saw two first round goalies. So I do think, and in that draft, you had two teams trading up to get their first round goalie. I do think teams take that seriously.
So I think that the reason why Arpin asked you about the goalies, because the Canadians made it clear that the goalie position would be a priority to them. They might go ahead and try to find a younger goaltender, either on the trade market, maybe a college free agent signing, who knows. But if you had to compare, like, in where do Trey Augustin and Carson Bjarnason, fare compared to Guyan and Robel in terms of different tiers? Are they a lot lower? Or let's say if the Canadians were to spend their second round pick drafting any one of those guys, is there a real drop off between, you know, Augustin Bjarnason and the two that we discussed earlier?
Right. I think Bjarnason was a guy I debated having in that range at points in this season. I don't have him there right now. I mean, if you watched it the first month or two of the year, he was absolutely on fire and looked like that kind of guy. He kind of cooled off a little bit after the fall. But he has those special athletic qualities. I would have both of those guys rated, you know, a tier or so below them. I just think because Bjarnason's good athlete, but I wouldn't say it's a special athlete to go with some of the inconsistencies. And Trey Augustin, he's super smart, and he has some athleticism in his game, but for a 6'0", 6'1 goalie, I would not call him like one of those special smaller goalies to classify him in that range. And one thing I think is interesting, because you mentioned, you said the Canadians might prioritize, you know, acquiring a goalie, is when I talk to teams around the league, that is, everyone always gives me the BPA, we always draft best player available crap all the time. But that's the one position I hear universally across the league, like people go off their boards to pick goalies. And they will fully admit that like, you know, because it's because it's such a depth chart, you know, it's a glaring depth chart thing. If you do or you don't have that guy in your system, like that legit guy in your system, not just like, oh, your fourth round pick, your Caden Primo, whatever you're kind of excited about, but it's not like a perfect player. But teams realize when they do or don't have a goalie of the future and they go off the, and they will go after that guy if they feel they need it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that the Canadians have their own second round pick this season. They don't have any other picks in the second round. That pick would probably be somewhere, I guess, in the range of 40-ish, you know, 39 to 41 or so. So
And Ottawa did that a couple of years ago. They identified their goalie of the future and Matt Sjogard, and they traded up in the second round to go get him. I'm not saying that's what Montreal will or should do, but right. If it's not going to be them, somebody else probably does it. So
yeah,
these guys should be around and around. One of them should be around at around that range, you would think.
I would think, although we do have 5 months to go still in the draft process, so we'll see where we are by end of June with these guys.
Last one for me, Corey. The among the Twitter darlings, there's Will Smith, who seems to be gathering a lot of chatter. So if we go by the hypothesis that the Canadians could draft 6, 7, or 8, is there any chance that Will Smith goes as far as number 8? Or it seems to, in your perception, he's the sort of guy that's pretty much a lock to go 5, 6, 7 and not even drop down to 8? Or he's so much into that conversation that it could be a bunch of other guys that go before him?
He's not a lock, I would say. You know, especially with those U.S. program guys, how their April tournament goes is so important. You know, especially since I would say in recent weeks or month, I would say Oliver Moore has played just as well, if not better than Smith in some of their games. As like I said, so the 18 Four Nations this weekend is going to be very, very important to see how those guys play there. And then, but especially the April U18 World Championships, that will determine. Because when I talk to people around the league, they do not think Smith is a top 5, top 6 lock. Like, lock him in there. Like say, Leo Carlson or Anna Fantilli are locks in their echelon of the draft. I think he has a very good chance to be there. Currently, that's where I have him slotted. But I can definitely see a reality where he kind of underwhelms in April. And whatever, Oliver Moore outplays him. And all of a sudden, you're flipping those guys. So we'll have to see how the next 2 months play out. But yeah, no, there's definitely a possibility he's there at 7, he's there at 8.
Last one for me, and I know I told people to go listen to the Athletic Hockey Show, and you talked about this on, and I still encourage everyone to go do that. But for those, from a Canadian's specific standpoint, you look at that Panthers pick and you look at your ranking and you know, the Colby Barlow situation just seems really fascinating to me. It's just like, it's really, really interesting how... And I, you know, I've obviously not watched him nearly as much as you have, but I've caught a couple of his games, and I kind of agree that it's, the numbers don't seem, when you watch him, the numbers don't seem to sort of, he doesn't scream, this is a guy who's got like a ton of goals this year when you watch him play, you know? And so I know that, you know, you talked to Max a lot about how difficult it is to kind of, reconcile that. And say, okay, well, these are numbers and this is what I see. But is there something kind of outside his goal scoring that intrigues you about him?
I think the work ethic is pretty strong. Like, this is a guy who I think, you know, when you watch him, his compete stands out. He kills penalties. He has a lot of energy in his game. You know, he's a good skater. He has a lot, you know, his game. There's a lot of things about his game that you think will translate into a pro. I think he is going to be a very good pro hockey player. But the question is, and it's almost seems silly to doubt, like, is he going to score a lot for a guy who's probably going to get 55 goals this year and had 30 goals the prior year? I mean, all this guy does is score goals. But I also thought it was really interesting that everyone knows he can score goals and scored 30 as an underage. But when, you know, Team Canada got their hands on this guy, they didn't even put him on their power play at the Hlinka. Like, it's a very strange case because the guy is so physically advanced already for his age. So I don't know what to make of him. You know, I talk to people in the league who think he'll be a top 10 pick, top 12 pick, who think really high of him. And then I talk to people who are, you know, a little scared off by the high side. You know, maybe if you hit, maybe he is Carter Verhaeghe. Who looks like a very good NHL player right now for the Florida Panthers, but maybe he's just a really nice, you know, two-way second line winger too. So it really depends on how much you believe in the offense and how much it's going to translate. And if you believe that, and it's not unreasonable, I think a guy is going to have something like 55 goals and 90 points this season, that you feel like that guy's going to score a lot in the NHL, then yeah, I mean, I understand why you'd be a big believer in him.
Can you remember a similarly like perplexing kind of case like Hibs? The numbers are there and you just don't seem to believe those numbers will, like, the numbers are so striking, but you just don't seem to believe that they'll translate to the next level.
I mean, so the thing is, I can give you those answers, but the answers don't usually apply to his body type. It's usually like Jordan Weal or something like that, or it's like Nick Petan. Like, it's like those kind of guys it's like, no, that's not going to happen. But yeah, it's usually not for the 6-0 guy who could skate that you're like, no, that's not a real player. That's not going to translate. So I think that's a very good question and one that I should have a better answer to if I don't have him as a highly rated player. Maybe I'm overthinking this one. Maybe I need to get a better answer to that question by the next time I release a list.
I know that some scouts are sometimes concerned with the physical maturity of certain players, that they peaked physically earlier than their peers, and that has a positive impact at the junior level. So should scouts be concerned with, you know, the amount of beard that he's been able to grow and the fact that he looks, to a certain extent, despite his baby face, he looks somewhat older in his body type than other guys.
Right. We were having discussions about that top prospect game among a few of us. The guy I kept thinking about was how Aaron Ekblad had a full beard when he was like 15 years old already. And now Aaron Ekblad obviously has been an outstanding hockey player in the NHL for a long time. But I would also argue he has not really changed materially as a player since he's entered the league too. You know, he was a really, really good player right away, but probably not a superstar. And he's been a really, really good player, but not a superstar pretty much, you know, throughout his career. So I think that's a concern. But if you want to take the flip or side argument, I thought Gabriel Landeskog was like a completely physically developed guy already when he entered the draft. And he was really good right away. And then he kind of had made some underwhelming years. And now he's having some star caliber years too. But those guys obviously went in different projected parts of the draft, 1 and 2 overall, as opposed to closer to 10 or into the teens. So it's maybe a different risk analysis there. It's a very tough case. Not one I have really good answers to right now to your questions. But we still got a few months left, so I hope I will have better answers at some point.
All right. Well, that's your homework assignment, Corey. Thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And obviously, you have a lot of work ahead of you, and kind of the prime time of the draft cycle is coming up here. So, think back to last February. I think we were mentioning this on the podcast the other day, but you think back to last February and where Juraj Slafkovský was in everyone's kind of consciousness. And, you know, I think he was just about to go to the Olympics or was at the Olympics at this point. So it's a lot can change is all I'm saying between now and the draft. But thank you. 100%. Thank you for going over the midway point analysis here.
Yeah. Yeah, no, for sure. We have the U18 Worlds. We have playoffs in all the major leagues to go through. I think I'm exaggerating, but some people were digging Adam Fantilli's grave after the World Juniors, and then he goes and, you know, points 2.5 points per game in college, and every game since then. So, you know, there's...
He's making a mockery of the NCAA right now. It's really quite ridiculous what he's doing.
Yeah, so we have a lot of hockey left to play.
Yeah. Well, Corey, it's always nice to have you on the show. So thanks a lot for coming. We appreciate it.
Yep, sure thing.
So, Marc-Antoine, always interesting getting Corey's perspective. There are very few people in general who put as much time and effort into the draft process other than NHL scouts than Corey or Scott Wheeler, obviously, is in the midst of doing his sort of pipeline, right? Like listings and rankings. But I do feel like there's kind of a clear picture that's starting to form for the Canadians. You know, knowing that they're going to have two picks that are relatively close together, barring a run by the Panthers here to get in, which is still possible. I mean, honestly, like when Corey said that there's a lot of hockey left to be played, there's a lot of NHL hockey left to be played as well. And, you know, as we sit right now, you know, if the draft were held again today, the Panthers would hold the 14th pick, but they're, you know, tied in points with Nashville. That's one spot ahead of them because they've played fewer games. They're 1 point behind the Islanders. They're 2 points behind the Sabres. They're 3 points behind, you know, Calgary, Pittsburgh, and Colorado. 4 points behind Minnesota. So, I mean, honestly, like a little winning streak, and they could be not only out of the lottery, but into the 20 range of the first round. But it is, you know, how do you feel like the Canadians need a right shot D? And it really is kind of a gape, glaring hole in their pipeline. And to have like this forward heavy draft, how do you feel they're going to approach that? Because the Austrian kid is intriguing to me in that sense.
Yeah, that's true. I think Corey seems to have Reinbacher higher than a lot of other people. So I like the fact that he makes some gutsy calls that go not necessarily against the grain, but certainly doesn't work by consensus, and that's what you're looking for when you read a draft specialist. But at the same time, the Canadians have to be sure and comfortable to the same level that Corey was at putting Reinbacher so high on his list, because if the Canadians, I think that's where probably the Panthers pick could be enticing for them, because they could also,
that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, they could try to read what other teams are going to do, because that's an unknown part of the draft and something that's probably not discussed and not exposed to the public all that much. But there's a great deal of information gathering, trying to figure out what the other teams are going to do, who are they liking, where do their top scouts, head scouts are going, especially late, late in the draft preparation. You know, obviously Memorial Cup, everybody's going to go there, but there will be some tournaments where, where do scouts go at a specific time, and they'll lead you to show their hands to a certain extent. So people pay attention to that. But so I think that the Canadians, if they have a good read, that they could have an interesting runway to get Reinbacher with the Florida pick. I think it would certainly serve a need. Getting him with their own pick, I find that a little bit more risky, but then again, we don't know what they're thinking. But it's just that it's such a pool of talented forwards that's why I'm saying, I asked him about the difference. You know, even though he sees that Reinbacher has a chance to be a top pairing defenseman, the team that will draft him will have to feel as though he really is going to be that guy, and he's not going to be like a number three defenseman or a number four defenseman, because then you might pass on a top line winger, even though it's not a center, it could be a winger, but still, if it's a top line winger, it's probably ultimately a guy that could have a higher asset value. So in that sense, it's going to be interesting to see. But with the number of good forwards that are available, I would see the Canadians drafting a forward with their own pick and maybe take a chance on a defenseman with the later pick. And that is, obviously, if Florida doesn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's, well, I mean, either way, they have that pick. I mean, so, I mean, assuming Florida doesn't make the conference final, you know, they'll be picking, you know, if they make the playoffs, then they're picking in the late teens. If they don't, then they're picking in the mid teens to early teens. So, and the other thing I think worth pointing out, and we talked about it somewhat with Corey, but it's worth emphasizing when it comes to the Canadians, is that, you know, we didn't mention this to Corey. It's the one guy that we didn't talk about is Kirby Dach. Kirby Dach, at the time they made the trade, and in concert with taking Juraj Slafkovský at number one, you know, they made it clear and they said this, you know, we wanted to make our club bigger. And so, you know, Marc Bergevin's regime was criticized by myself included for going through a period at the draft where they were obsessed with size and, you know, picks like Dalton Thrower, McCarron, you know, size, toughness, you know, there was a certain profile of player that the Canadians took a lot of, you know, some chances on in the second and third rounds, particularly.
Connor Crisp.
Connor Crisp is the name I was trying to think of, and it's one of my favorite names, frankly. But yeah, those types of guys. This current regime, which, you know, we've all painted as being modern and just more on the cutting edge of how hockey is being played today and how it will be played tomorrow, it's worth noting that this current regime values size, at least, if not necessarily some of the other qualities that those players had, but the size aspect, they put a lot of importance on that, you know, and I think what Corey was talking about is very relevant here. When you look at teams that go far in the playoffs, they have that characteristic to their forward group and actually up and down their lineup, really, which is why the Canadiens continue getting calls on Josh Anderson. Like, this is why he has value as a player. And so when you look at this group of forwards, this is what strikes me. You know, you have Bedard, obviously, you know, unless they win the lottery or something remarkable happens, they're not going to get Fantilli. They're not going to get Carlson. But you look at Bedard, Michkov, Benson, Smith, Moore, Leonard, even Barlow to some extent. He's not a huge man. He's 6 foot. There's so many guys in this draft, as we noted, that are on the smaller side, which is why, you know, hearing about Chalet, who, you know, has those consistency issues, but has a good frame on him. He's not the heaviest guy in the world right now, but he's, you know, he's got a 6'2" frame on him. Dvorsky, kind of the same deal. I could kind of see that tipping the scales for this group of management and scouts, where the combination of size and skill might possibly win out over a smaller guy who's more skilled. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, as long as tipping the scale and be the deciding factor, yes, but you must not draft size just for the sake of drafting size. It's just that in between.
Well, I don't think any of those guys are just big.
You know? No, exactly. And that's why that's part of what makes them interesting, but it's contrary to the previous regime. You're not just going to say, oh, we're going to draft, as we see sometimes on Twitter, more big, M-O-A-R, you know? It's just,
yes. Yeah.
It's not just that. I think that it's going to be an item that's going to be considered, because as progressive thinking as Kent Hughes may be, you can be a forward thinking as much as you want, but at some point it's going to clash with the reality of what we see on the ice. And the game is not changing as fast as some of those people are thinking. And I think that the service or what the smaller guys have forced the bigger guys to do in the last few years is to force the bigger guys to increase their level of skill, especially, you know, puck skills, you know, their hands and whatnot. And you see now a whole generation of bigger guys that are a lot more adept with the puck and with their puck handling and whatnot than previous. So there might have been a window open for smaller players, but at some point it's going to close again in favor of bigger players that will have learned the tricks of saying, well, let's play like a small player, but with my big range, my big size. And that's ultimately the type of player that's going, everybody's going to covet. So the way that, you know, you think of how Austin Matthews has developed his shooting technique, guys like that, in the last 6 to 8 years, there's such a change, and you see that the bigger guys come and there's so much more skill generally in the little refined aspects of the game that used to be the signature of this small and fast skaters. So I think that when you look at those guys, yeah, Shally could be an option, maybe Dvorsky. I'm not sure if to which extent it's going to bring them ahead of the other guys, but I see definitely size being a detriment to a guy like Zach Benson, for sure.
Yeah, which brings us to, I guess, the final question. I know we asked this to Corey, but I would like to know, if Michkov gets to 7 and the Canadians are picking 7th, and Will Smith is still on the board, what do you think they do?
I would turn on my phone and see who's interested in Michkov. That's the first thing. It's hard to tell because, I mean, at some point, the thing with Michkov that makes him so enticing is that it really goes down to a question of philosophy. How long are you willing to wait to have a difference maker on your team? And it forces you, because we don't know what's the projection for some of those guys. You say Smith, or it could be another U.S. player. But Corey was making a great point about the fact that some of those guys, you know, it might be 3 years or 4 years even before they have a real impact in the league. There might be a guy that will have a shorter, you know, it will have an impact in a shorter time frame. But ultimately, if you're willing to be patient enough and you're willing to say, you know what, our rebuild is going to take longer than we want, but ultimately we're going to have, this guy is going to be like the icing on the cake, the cherry on top, whatever you want to call it. Well, if the Montreal Canadiens find a way to restructure themselves and be competitive again, notwithstanding that first round pick that they're going to have, imagine the cherry on top that they would get when they become a playoff caliber team, an up and coming team with a great amount of younger players, young prospects coming in, and then you add Michkov to the lot. That's a difference maker. And to me, that's the point that I've been hammering the whole time, is the Montreal Canadiens might have a ton of prospects, but they need guys, especially at forward, they need a guy that's going to be a game changer for them. And from what I can understand, Michkov could be a game changer, and in no likelihood is going to be one. So if he's still there at 7, and they're not completely averse for reason XYZ, you got to go with the guy that really has a chance to put you over the top.
I honestly, I don't disagree with you, but the question is, will the I think the Canadians would pass on him. I really do. I can't
for what
say
reason?
Why. Well, I think, as I mentioned earlier, they do have their difference. Cole Caulfield is a difference maker. He's a goal scorer. He's a smaller guy. I think they feel like they have their small top six forward. And that's it. I don't think they're willing to put a guy who's 5'9", when they already have a guy who's 5'8", generously, in their top six. I don't think they're willing to do that. I really don't. I don't want to say they're. Oh, first of all, I don't know that for a fact. I don't think they would do that. And I think the size thing in his case would play against him, even though it should be seen as a gift at 7th. This guy, and frankly, I would take him. I can't help but get the impression that they would not. I don't know that for a fact. This is just a hunch, that if that scenario were to play out, that they would pass. But for all the reasons that you said, I don't think they should. But I just get the impression that they feel like, in terms of a team building, and by then, in all likelihood, Cole Caulfield will be under contract long term for probably big money. I think they're gonna decide that Cole Caulfield's our guy in terms of a special goal scorer, and in terms of our one slot of a smaller forward in our top six. And I don't think they're going to go with another one personally. And it would be a hell of a dilemma. And again, you make a great point. If he slides to seven, Ken Hughes should be on the phone immediately, or at least fielding calls immediately if they don't want to pick him. But I just have this sneaking suspicion that they would let him, that they would let him, they would pick someone else.
Well, he's considered a top three talent in this draft. So if the Canadians were to draft top three for sure, then that's a different matter entirely. I don't think they would draft him. But if
you I'm saying at seven.
If at seven, to me, it's a different discussion altogether. And
it is.
It would probably be, that's true that he's a smaller guy, and it would, the Canadians are, already have plenty of them. We've discussed it earlier. But my view on
he's
this
a smaller
is
guy who will have been playing in Europe on the European ice surface for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
That's,
I know.
That's another thing that I think would go into the equation.
Yeah, but to me, it's just at some point, it's not, oh my God, we have a lot of small forwards. It's not that we're going to, they would add one more. It's at some point, I would view it, if I was in a hockey front office, I would view it as we have just only a very finite number of slots or spots available for smaller forwards, and we're going to give it to the more deserving. And if we realize that Mishkov down the road could be a more impactful player than Nick Suzuki, well, when we get to the when we get to the river and we're ready to cross that bridge, we'll make a decision on do we move Mishkov, do we move Suzuki or whatever. The thing is, you don't say we're not going to get that player because we already have this one, and that one. Is force the, make sure you make room for the best smaller forward of the group. And so that's why at some point there's going to be an attrition. If Sean Farrell one day comes up and he's ready to take Brendan Gallagher's spot, well, so be it, you know. And but the year that Quinn Hughes was available, the Canadians should not have said, well, you know what, we already have Victor Mete. That was the wrong way to think. You know, it's just you at some point you push Mete aside, as they did, and you bring a guy who's got quarterback qualities to him. So,
well, yeah.
But
comparing Cole Caulfield to Victor Mete, comparing an under contract Cole Caulfield to Victor Mete is not exactly.
No. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's just that at some point there's a finite number of small forwards. And I think Cole Caulfield, nobody's saying this Cole Caulfield is going anywhere. And neither is Suzuki for that matter. But it's just that its projection is 3 years, 4 years down the road. And it's a guy that if he's a special talent, no matter what you do with him, he's an asset. And who's going to be the most valuable asset that you can get on draft day? To me, that's an important matter to think about.
That's to me too. Just to be clear, I'm not saying I wouldn't take Mishkov at seven. I just don't get the impression that Canadians would take him at seven. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
Well,
I don't think they would.
Well, you know what? We're gonna find an answer to that question. That's for sure.
Well, we might. I mean, listen, the thing is that it's a very plausible scenario. It's like a very plausible hypothesis to say if the Canadians are picking seventh, and that Mishkov would be available along with a lot of the players we mentioned: Chalet, Smith, Benson, Dvorsky, Yak. I mean, there could be lots of guys there. Mishkov could be one of them, you know, depending on who's picking fourth, fifth, sixth. I mean, those teams are going to have a real debate on their hands, each of them, no matter who they are. But in all likelihood, let's say Columbus, Chicago finish 1-2. So you're looking at like Anaheim, maybe San Jose, Philly, to some extent, it's Arizona, obviously, maybe Vancouver, and then maybe Montreal. So it's going to be this dilemma, this scenario that we just discussed. Every one of those teams are going to be facing that same dilemma. Are we willing to wait for this guy who could be, and looks like he will be, but could be still, you know, a difference-making type of talent, as opposed to someone that is more of a sure thing to actually play on our team in the near future. So it would be fascinating to see what would happen. I think it'll be fascinating. All of those picks after two in the draft, this is going to be one of the more interesting first rounds we've seen in a long time. I think we're going to see some surprises. It should be very fascinating. But again, thanks to Corey Prondman for helping break it down for us. And by the time we're back,
we spent a whole hour talking about prospects, and I don't think we've named Connor Bedard once. Imagine how the conversation has shifted.
There's nothing left to say about that guy. Like, what is there to say? Corey, what do you think of Connor Bedard? He's amazing. Okay, moving on. You know, he's as consensus a number one as you can get. And listen, like, you know, all this to say, I'm not comparing the two, but Alexi Lafreniere's draft year, he was such a consensus number one. I'm not saying he was anywhere near as good as Connor Bedard, and you can tell with Bedard, he is a special, special player. I'm not comparing the two guys, but there's a difference between this and that. You know, I mean, like, Bedard is not only is there no debate that he's number one, and I kind of feel bad for Adam Fantilli, to be honest with you, because any other year, that guy would be surefire, hands down, no debate, number one overall pick, for sure. Like, what he's doing in the NCAA is outrageous. It's ridiculous to see a freshman forward do what he's doing. Just a tough year to be born for Adam Fantilli, so I feel for him. But anyhow, it's you know, I think those two guys are not debatable, so I think that's where the draft gets interesting at number three. The Canadians don't look like they're going to get there in terms of, you know, where they finish in the standings. Could they win the third pick in the lottery? Yes. Perhaps,
they can get the first and second. They cannot get the third.
They changed that. That's right. Yeah, they changed that. So yeah, they can't even get the third pick. So
yeah,
it's, you know, it's the fun starts there. But I do think the Michkov thing is going to be a thing. I think they're owners. I think they're general managers. You know, if you're a GM, you pick the guy. Like, you remember Marty's thing? You need guys who are willing to plant the tree knowing they won't get to sit in the shade. That's picking Michkov for a GM. I'm going to pick this guy, and I'm not even going to have this job by the time he gets here. Like, their GMs are going to think that. It's going to be fascinating to watch. Anyhow, we'll see. So that's it for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on Friday with an episode of Le Sport Athletic. And just a reminder, if you have not subscribed to The Athletic, you can get a discount on your first year subscription by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. That's theathletic.com/athletic support to get a discount on all the coverage available, not only in hockey, but across all sports at The Athletic.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Bye-bye.